All right, everybody, welcome to a special version of the podcast where I'm going to tell you guys a campfire tale. True events, true story of a time I got sent to a wilderness program when I was a kid. And I couldn't think of a better place to tell it than in the woods. In August, in the dead of summer, 2 feet away from a fire, okay? So if I'm 15 pounds lighter by the end of the story, then you'll understand why. But, every time I tell the story, I get in the zone, and it really brings me back to when I was there. And being in the woods, something about being in the woods right now gets me fired up about telling the story. So when I was, you know, when I was a sophomore in high school, I was heading down a bad path. I was already into heavy drugs, and, you know, my parents just couldn't control me at all. They didn't know what to do. I would just leave the house for days and not tell them where I was going and not answer their phone calls. They had no control over me. They didn't know what to do. So they had a plan that I wasn't aware of. And I remember my father, because this was maybe like 2 weeks after my sophomore year of high school, my father came up to me and he said, me and your mom want you to go to this anger management camp for 2 weeks. And I said, I'm not taking 2 weeks out of my summer. I went out with my friends. The next day, he tried to pull the mom card because he knows I'm a mama's boy. And he said, Anthony, would really mean a lot to your mom if you went to this anger management camp. And I was like, I'm not doing it. And then on the third day, he goes, I'll give you $300 if you go. And I said, all right, I want the money before we get in the car. When are we leaving? He goes, we leave tomorrow. So I went to this barbershop in Taunton called The Cutting Edge, you know, got a fresh lineup, packed a suitcase of my Sunday's best because I thought maybe there'd be some, like, angry girls there or something, you know what I mean? And me and my father weren't on, you know, good terms, which is, I can understand why, you know what I mean? I was such a, you know, I was trouble. I was lost, you know what I mean? I'll get into those reasons, you know, maybe down the road in other episodes of the podcast, but needless to say, it was a silent car ride. We didn't say a word to each other. And we're driving and driving and driving. I didn't ask a lot of questions, which thinking back, I was like, why didn't I sniff this out, you know? And so I fall asleep for God knows how long, wake up, we're still driving. Now we're in the mountains. I'm like, where are we? We end up in Lake Placid, upstate New York, which is like, I don't know, a 7-hour drive, 6-hour drive. And he brought me to this little cottage in the town of Lake Placid, and he walked me in, and it was like set up like a regular home, except where the dining room would be, it was like a lady sitting behind a desk. No other kids my age. And I can remember, this is when I started to get a weird feeling. And I can remember my father just immediately left. There was no, again, we weren't like on good terms, so there was no like emotional goodbye or anything like that. It was only 3 days, 2-3 days anger management camp, right? But the look he gave me when he opened the door to leave, my stomach dropped because I knew something was wrong. He sort of opened the door, turned and looked at me and went, and then left. And I got up off the couch, and I walked out to the door, and I looked, and I opened it, and I looked out the driveway, and he was already backing up. And as soon as he exited the driveway, a black Suburban pulled in, and these two huge Navy SEAL-looking dudes got out and walked towards the house. And I turned around and sat back on the couch, and they came in, and they said, are you Anthony Varela? And I said, yeah. And they said, you got to come with us. And I sort of looked over at the lady at the desk, and I was like, are these guys with you, you know? And she was like, oh, yeah, they're going to take you out to the campground, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, campground? All right, whatever. Still kind of not sure what's going on. And I remember being in the SUV with these guys. I'm in the back seat. The guy in the passenger seat's got a clipboard, and he's asking me a bunch of questions. He's firing off, like, are you allergic to any medication? Are you allergic to this? Are you know what I mean? And just checking off the stuff on the clipboard. And I remember I interrupted him, and I said to him, you know, how long am I going to be here for? And he said, well, it's an average of 6 to 8 weeks, but really it all depends on your attitude. And I kind of got cocky with the guy. I said, well, you know, my father told me I was only going to be here for 3 days. And he turned around to face me with this like smug look on his face, and he goes, "Well, your father lied to you in order to get you here." And I went into a complete state of shock. And then he explained to me, "Well, if your father couldn't trick you to come in here, then we would have had to come to your house at 3 a.m. and physically drag you out of bed and throw you in the car in restraints and drive you the whole way." So now I'm in shock. I'm kind of silent because I got caught. I've never been April fooled like that more in my entire life. You know, I'm in complete shock. And so I can remember now we're driving deep into the Adirondacks. Now, you got to understand, the Adirondacks is the biggest mountain range on this side of the Mississippi, okay? And we're in, there's no telephone poles, there's no houses, we're in the woods, we're in the thick of it. Then all of a sudden, they take a turn down a dirt road. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, that's it. My parents hired a company to bring me into the woods and shoot me in the back of the head. Okay, that's what I thought was going to happen. And I just didn't know what to expect. And then as we're approaching this little, like, cottage-looking, campy shack thing, I see these two kids walking. And they have these bright red pants on. They have these red bandanas. They look like they've been in the woods for 47 years. And they have these tall walking sticks. And I remember thinking to myself, because there was a show on TV back in the day called Brat Camp. You know how, like, families will have, like, TV time where everyone sits in the living room and we all watch a show together? That was one of the shows. And this is before I really started to get in trouble. And I remember my mother saying to me, like, sarcastically, "Keep it up, Anthony." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, haha, okay, yeah." Well, and now here I am. And so it's starting to sink in what's going on. Then I go into the little shack, and they take all my clothes, they take my cigarettes, they take the friggin' $300 my father gave me because I made him give it to me before we got in the car. Otherwise, I wasn't getting it. And so then they hike. They give me a massive hiking backpack, hiking boots. I'm in these red, like, rain gear hiking pants, a blue thermal, and an orange beanie, hiking beanie, or a hunting beanie, or whatever. And they hike me out to what they call ground school. So it's where they show you the ropes of basic survival needs before the real program starts. And when I get there, there's a kid in a leg cast sitting down by the campfire. And so it's the first person that, like, is in the program that I can ask questions to kind of get this shit figured out, you know? And I remember going up to him, and I was like, "Hey, dude, what's up? Like, what happened to your leg?" And he was like, "Oh, I fell off a cliff." And I was like, "You fell off a cliff?" And I was like, "How long have you been here for?" And he said, 77 days. But I'm going home this weekend. I was like, that's when I started to really freak out. So I said to myself, there's got to be a way out. And I started demanding a phone call as if I was in jail. So there was like a woodsy therapist type of counselor. There was like a big Adirondack hunter type guy, military type dude. And then another guy that was kind of off in the distance. So there was a 3-to-1 ratio. And then you had Cripple Boy in the corner, you know. And I can remember plotting in my head, like, all right, what am I going to do to escape this situation? So first thing was, I want my phone call. Because, you know, in movies, when you go to jail, like, you get that one phone call. So I'm thinking it applies here as well. You know? So they're like, "You don't get a phone call." And I was like, "I don't think my mother knows how harsh these conditions are. Kathleen would have never done this. She would have never signed me up for this." And they're like, "Well, we don't even have a phone." And I was like, "You don't have a phone? What happened when Timmy over here fell off a cliff? What did you guys do? Did you guys put this cast together yourself with paper mache? I don't think so. You definitely called emergency services. You got to have some sort of sat phone. I want to talk to my mother now." So I'm freaking out. And obviously they've dealt with this shit millions of times. I'm sure kids have tried, you know, to escape and stuff like that. We'll get to that. And so the next thing that I tried was I said, "I'm going to sit Indian style on the ground. I'm not going to listen to a word they say. and I'm not going to move. I'm not going to drink water. I'm not going to eat. I am going to sit here and just disintegrate until they have no choice but to bring me to a hospital and I get to go home. I lasted about 35 minutes with my ADHD before I started losing it. Couldn't you talk about not being able to sit with self? I lasted 20, 25 minutes. So then I started to like snap out of it a little. And, you know, they were making food by the campfire. And it didn't even dawn on me, the food portion of things, because I was experiencing all these emotions. But at this time in my life, I was a very picky eater. Very, like, breakfast for dinner type of kid. Oh. Like, you know, not eating what mom cooked for dinner type of, like, very, very extremely picky. Remember in high school, you'd play that drinking game, Never Have I Ever?
Yes.
I'd always win because I'd be like, Never Have I Ever Eaten Lasagna. And people would be like, what the fuck, Varela? You've never eaten lasagna? But I've gotten over my pickiness since then. But back, you know, again, I'm 16 years old. I think I am king shit. I think I'm like, you know, in a biker gang, basically, without the motorcycles. Like, I'm an outlaw. And so, you know, as an adult now, I can see it. Because 16-year-olds doing cocaine and Klonopins and drinking and, you know, hanging around with older kids. And, you know, it was just crazy. So I understand now, but at the time I thought, like, my parents are overreacting. Let me just live my life. I'm in control, you know. I'm doing this because I want to do this. And so now I'm getting nervous because it's like, what do they have to eat? I didn't even think about that. So they have these little tin cups and these orange spoons. They got a boiling pot of hot water over the fire, and then they have this bag of oats. So not oatmeal with, like, cinnamon, sugar, and, you know, some raisins in there. Just straight oats, like what they feed horses, okay? And so I see him mushing it with the water, and it looks like dog puke. And I tell him, I go, I'm not eating that. And they go, not only do you have to eat it, you got to finish the cup. And I go, listen, I don't know if it's in my file. If my mother told you that I was a picky eater, maybe you guys have some ham and cheese or some peanut butter and jellies in the back that I could have. But I'm not eating that. And he said, I'll tell you again. Not only are you eating it, you're finishing the cup. So now the anger management's coming, right? Because I went from shock to confusion to sadness to really strategically trying to think of a way to get out of there. To straight anger. I just felt it spike, and I was getting hot, like kind of being 2 feet away from a fire in the middle of August. And so I snapped, but I said to myself, all right, I'm going to try one bite. And I put it in my mouth, and as soon as the oats, like, touched the back of my throat, no diddy, I friggin' spit it out. I took the cup. I threw it into the fire, and then I took off into the woods like this. I'll show you. It was like this.
It's pretty fast, dude. It's pretty fast.
Yeah, this is 34-year-old Anthony. 16-year-old Anthony. It was like, when you remember the scene in Forrest Gump? When the leg braces finally fell off,
oh, yeah.
And he was getting chased by the truck.
Oh, yeah.
The kids were throwing rocks at him. That's how fast I was running through the woods. In the middle of the Adirondacks, no formal training, like I was Bear Grylls, okay? I'm out of breath from that.
That's what I'm saying.
I gotta stop smoking cigarettes. And so, oh, can we take a five? And so, I think it's a heat, too, from the fire. I'm gonna faint, dude. And so, so now I'm just running in the woods, like full adrenaline, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. The guy's coming after me, like you're in the water and you see a great white as fast as I can move. And so so I'm just at no plan. And so I'm running for maybe like a solid minute and 30 seconds at a full sprint, right? I probably like broke Olympic records, but there was nobody there with a stopwatch, unfortunately. And I can remember slowing down to kind of get my bearings because I knew, like, oh, I need to – let me just find a water source. I'll follow that to a bigger water source. Eventually, I have to get to the ocean, right? Like, I didn't know – but I'm upstate New York, dude. You know how far away the ocean is?
Hit a great lake.
Let me find a street. But the Adirondack – like, if I never got found, dead.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, picky eater. All of a sudden, I'm eating squirrel and branch. You know what I mean? And so I start, like, doing, like, a light jog. Then I look up ahead, and I have three guys coming towards me, not the three guys from the camp. So unbeknownst to me, big vocab word, unbeknownst to me, once I heard unbeknownst, I put it right in my ass right away.
Sure.
Ever since then, I use it when I can. And so there's groups that are affiliated with this program spread out all throughout the Adirondacks. So they might have groups of 10. There's guys' groups and girls' groups. And so they must have walkie-talkie to another group. You know, these guys are friggin' Adirondackians. So they're like, we got a runner heading 47 longitude, to however they say it. And so as I started getting closer to them, they had fanned out and then formed like a circle around me and started closing it in. And in my head, I'm like, they've done this before. And I get to the guy, one guy gets closest to me, and I give him like a Barry Sanders juke, tackles me right to the ground. Now I got two guys carrying me back from where I came from, armpit, armpit, feet of dragon. My armpit starts hurting, so I'm like, all right, I'll walk, dude. You got me. I'll walk, dude. And as soon as they let go and my feet touch the ground, gone. Catch up to me again. Now they drag me the whole way back, and now I'm defeated. Now I start to get, like, upset and emotional because I'm like, there's no way out. And all of a sudden, this guy appears out of nowhere, dude. Like King Therapy. Like the final boss of therapists, right? I remember he had, like, one of those, like, freaking Australian Outback-ish hats on, you know what I mean? And he had, like, long, curly red hair coming out of it, glasses. He just looked like the ultimate, like, librarian slash therapist, but he was so calming. And he approached me, and he was like, hey, man, heard you having a pretty rough time. And as soon as I heard his voice, I was, like, at ease. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I am having a tough time. He was like, well, it's about to get dark out here soon. Why don't I teach you how to tie a couple knots and how to set up your camp? Where are you going to be sleeping tonight? And so I'm like, okay. And through doing that, he's talking to me, and he broke down my barriers within a minute. Like, as soon as I saw, like, magical. I wonder where this guy is today. He's somewhere walking on water. I can guarantee you that. And so he probably died for 3 days and then came back. You know what I mean? And so he's setting up where I would be sleeping for my stay at this program. You know, we would always be on the move, and I'll get into that later on in the story. But essentially how we slept every night is we would find two trees similar to, like, maybe those two trees over there. Those two right behind me. No, you got to be further apart than that.
Yeah.
And you would tie what's called P-cord, which is essentially like white shoestring.
Okay.
Maybe eye level. You tie it from one tree to another tree with no slack, right? And then you threw a small blue tarp over that. And then you tied off the four corners using like little sticks as stakes. You tie those off so it made a perfect A-frame. It's called an A-frame tent. So if it rained, you didn't get wet. Then I had what was called the bug bivy. So essentially it was like a plastic with netting that I would sleep in so the bugs wouldn't eat my face off. And then in the bug bivy, I was in a sleeping bag, and that was it. So no tents. And you're in the Adirondacks. It's like the highest population of certain types of bears and mountain lions. And so I remember I sat there and I cried myself to sleep. And I did ground school for about 3 days, and then they were like, all right, you're ready to meet your group. So my group was a group of kids that had already been in the woods. Some kids were at the program now for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. It's maybe like 8 to 10 kids, 3 or 4 instructors per group. And what the instructors would do is they'd work a week on, a week off. So they'd be with us in the woods for a week. And what we did essentially is we just hiked up and down mountains, rivers, streams, swamps all day. No trails, what's called bushwhacking. So just straight through the woods. And I remember if, like, you were walking through where there was, like, a lot of branches that were, like, swinging, you'd have to call out flyback so the person behind you doesn't get hit in the face. So you're moving the branches forward, and then when you fully go through them, they're going to snap back. So you'd have to be like, flyback! And you'd get lazy, and all of a sudden you'd get hit in the face with a branch, and you'd be like, Jake, no flyback, buddy! No freaking flyback! So anyways, I approach my group. Right, and these kids start popping up behind trees like the hills have eyes. Like, oh, we got fresh meat. You know what I mean? They just start coming out of the woods, right? And I'm sort of like, oh, what are we doing here? And I'll never forget, this kid came up to me. His name was Conrad Reiser. He was from Indiana.
What a name.
He had a big, like, white dude afro, curly afro. And he was like a hippie guy, right? And he was like, hey, man. And he was a patient or whatever you want to call it. You know, not a counselor. And he came up to me and he was like, hey, man, I heard you're having a really tough time. And, you know, I just wanted to give you some advice as somebody that's been out here for a couple of weeks. He was like, dude, just do what they say, get with the program, and you'll get out of here a lot quicker. The more you fight it, the longer you're going to stay, because they want to see that you've changed before they let you go. Because what I didn't know is that my parents had signed over temporary custody to this place. So if, and signed all these waivers and shit, so they couldn't pull me if they wanted to.
Wow.
I'm sure they could have gone a legal way, but by the time they got it done, I would have been graduated from the program anyways, right? And so that first night, sitting around the campfire as the new guy, they pulled out a letter. Essentially, it was just like, it wasn't like in an envelope or anything. It was like printed out like a freaking science class packet, dude. It was this thick. And it was called the Impact Letter, and my mom wrote it. And it was literally everything I had ever done to hurt the family, right? From stealing thousands of dollars from my father, from all the drugs that I did, all the way down to, like, the small stuff of, like, watching too much porn on the family computer and making it have viruses and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And I had to read this out loud in front of all these strangers, the counselors and the kids in my group. So it was like immediately these kids are hearing like all my flaws and all the evil shit that I had done in my life. And it was a big wake up call to me, you know, and I'm kind of reading it and I'm kind of like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm still really pissed at my parents for tricking me and doing this to me. And then for whatever reason, well, as an adult now, I can see the reasons, but when it got to the portion of the letter where my mom was describing how I impacted my sister's life, because my sister's 5 years younger than me. So at the time, she's 11, 12 years old, you know, and I had been a menace the last 2 years. So, you know, she probably saw stuff that she an 11, 12-year-old shouldn't have seen. And I didn't realize until I read that portion of the impact letter, like, oh, my actions affect my little sister. Where it was like, I was cool with it affecting my mom and dad, but once she got brought into it, that's when I really felt terrible about myself. And I got emotional, and that was the only portion of the letter where I actually cried, was when my mom was talking about how I impacted my sister's life. And I can remember, so that I'd already been in the woods for 4 days at this point. And I can remember like that impact letter kind of really started to change the self-talk I was having with myself, because it went from my parents are overreacting, where it, I can understand where they're coming from. I'm still mad, but I can understand. And so then it was explained to me that there's different phases, right? You start off as a turtle, and then you become a wolf, and then you become a bear, then you become a hawk.
Oh.
And when you become a hawk, you know you're close to graduating and leaving the program. But in between each animal, there was a packet and a checklist of things you needed to complete. It was a mixture of writing assignments and physical activities. So I literally needed to learn how to bow drill fires. For those of you that don't know, like through with natural materials, just files, because they couldn't trust us with knives. So what a bow drill is essentially is you find a stick that's curved like a bow, and there's certain woods that are better for it that are, you know, aren't going to break easy, and you even fire harden them, which you put them close to a fire but not too close to a fire so they don't burn up with the fire. And then once they're fire hardened, you take that P cord that you use to make the tent.
Yeah.
and you make sort of like a bow. Where with this, you have a little slack in it.
Yeah.
And then with the files, you make a spindle. So it's like a thick pencil, essentially, that you're filing. And it has a point, and then the top of it is rounded, just like an eraser.
Yep.
And you take that spindle, and you wrap it in the bow. So now the bow is around the spindle, and you have the bow like this. And then you have a piece, you have a fireboard that you've collected in the woods, and you cut a notch in it. And then you have this coal, this like little paper coal thing, right, that catches sparks. And so, or catches like an ember and makes it, you know, light up,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so difficult to do. So you're making these materials by scratch, and you literally have your foot in the fireboard, and you're going like this with the bow. And now the spindle is spinning into the notch, creating friction. And if you create enough friction, you'll start to see smoke.
It gets hot.
Then you'll get an ember. And you take that ember and you drop it into a pile of pine needles that you've wrapped in birch bark like a tortilla, which is all really flammable. And then you hold it up and you blow in it. And then that catches on fire and you throw it into a pile of small sticks. And then you get medium sticks, then you get large sticks, and then you get a fire going. And so you needed to do that a certain number of times before you moved on from one phase to another. And just that portion would cause kids to be in the woods for 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks longer than if they had just gotten it for a second, third try. It was a very difficult thing. Along with that, you had to learn how to set traps, and you know, you had to do different physical activities, one-on-one, group activities, stuff like that, before you could go on to the next phase. And they always made it a big deal when you cross from, like, turtle to wolf or wolf to bear. And so essentially, as time goes on, I'm becoming, like, a man of the woods. And I'm, like, essentially what we would do every day is we would just hike and hike and hike and hike and then stop and say, this looks like a good place to set up camp. And then we were timed, right? We were timed how long it would take us to set up camp. So everybody needed to set up their own individual tarps. Then we needed to set up a group tarp, which was the same way you'd set up an individual tarp, except way the rope's way thicker. You'd put it up way higher, and the tarp is like a giant, massive tarp that is enough to cover the whole group and the fire. You would need to, somebody would need to bow drill and get a fire going. We would need to find the nearest water source and fill the pot with water. And then somebody needed to dig the latrine, which is where everyone would shit. Okay? And so we had digging sticks that we made ourselves, so shovels we made out of wood with files. And then we would dig a hole that was like 3 feet deep by 3 feet wide. For everybody to poop in. And then we needed to, before they stopped the timer, we needed to set up camp, essentially, before they clicked it. So there was one more thing we needed to do, which is we needed to hang our food. So we needed to go downwind or upwind, I forget what it was, like a certain ways away from where we were all sleeping, to be able to hang our food. So bears don't get attracted, or animals don't get attracted to where we're sleeping. They get attracted to where we've hung the food, and you hang the food suspended 20 feet in the air so they can't get at it. And the way that you would do that is we had these like Nalgene water bottles. So you'd fill a bottle with water, you tie a rope around it, and then you'd huck it up where there's a thick branch. And it would go over that branch and then back down.
And then
you take that end and you tie that off to a tree. And then you take the loose end and you'd put it through the straps of all of our food bags and then tie that in a knot all together. And then you'd hoist it up into the air, 20 feet in the air, and then tie that off, right? And so all that needed to be set up before they stopped the time. And we had, like, punishments if we didn't get certain times and stuff like that. And then the next day, you were to break down camp completely and have everything packed correctly, and that would also get timed. And then while we were hiking, say you needed to take a dump, you dig what's called a personal latrine, which the requirements for that were smaller, less digging, because it's one use, and then you fill the hole. And then sometimes people would break the rule and they do what's called surface poos, where they just take a shit on the surface. But we might circle back, and if the counselors see it, so we got a surface poo, and then we're all in trouble. And so another funny thing, too, is at night they used to take our boots. So we couldn't run away in the middle of the night. And if you had to take a dump in the middle of the night or pee in the middle of the night, you'd have to wake the instructors up. And the way you'd wake them up is you'd yell out, pee boots. So in the middle of the night, who knows, that you never knew what time it was, right? In the middle of the night, you'd yell out and have to wake up the instructor. And you'd always start off like, pee boots. Pee boots. Until you're yelling it, pee boots. Right? And then, like, remember we had this one instructor, his name was Toby. He'd always be like, tie it in a knot, right? Like, he just didn't want to get up. And, yeah, I mean, some of the instructors there were, like, intense woodsmen, where, like, they could rip tree bark off of a tree, take a bite out of it, and tell you that there's going to be a rainstorm in 3 days. You know what I mean? Like, those types of guys.
It must have been tough with them going home. And then another set coming in, like...
Yeah, so it was, and the reason for that is so they could get a break, because they're getting paid that whole week that they're with us, or like 5 days on, five days off, I forget. Yep. But what they would do is they'd bring the food drops for the week, they'd bring one letter from our family, and then the counselors leaving would take a picture of us, and our family could track us on a website. It's like, it cost my family like $35,000 to send
them. Damn!
And so it was called Adirondack Leadership Expeditions. I'm not sure if it's still around. And it was funny, and I'll post a couple of these pictures. Every time, like, it was time to take a picture, I'd, like, rub dirt on my face and try to look as sad as possible, hoping that my parents would pull me from the program. And the food was literally oats every day for breakfast, and then rice and beans, rice and lentils, quinoa, couscous, all shit that a picky eater's never even heard of. But you get so hungry, you're exerting yourself. I'll eat caca. You know what I mean? I'll eat anything. I don't care. And so we had a cast of characters in the group, too. There was one kid from Vermont who had, like, a leg up. It's like, your parents should have sent you to New York City. You know what I mean? Like, what are they doing? Like, he already knows how to do half this shit. And then you had Conrad Reiser from Indiana. He was the man. You had Jake 1 and Jake 2. Jake 1 was maybe, like, 4'9". And Jake 2 was like 6'3". So they were like opposites of each other. And then we had Panama John.
Oh.
And I felt so bad for Panama John because he was this kid from Panama City, Panama. He had an accent. And his parents sent him there because he got caught smoking weed.
Oh, that's terrible.
So like such a strict, like overkill.
Yes.
To get sent to a wilderness program for smoking weed. So he was just like an innocent and we were all wild. Like I remember I used to do this thing where like new guys would come in. And I would tell my group, like, oh, tell the new guy that I have, like, Tourette's syndrome, but I'm also, like, a psychopath. And that if you laugh at my Tourette's outburst, like, he'll come in your tent in the middle of the night and try to strangle you. So the new guy would come in nervous, not knowing anybody, and we'd all be sitting around, and all of a sudden I'd be like, fuck, ass, shit! And then look him directly in the eyes to see if he'd, like, laugh. You'd get all, we'd do shit like that to, like, pass the time. It was funny. And I remember John when Panama John when he introduced himself. This sticks in my head for whatever reason. They call me Panama John. I'm from Panama City, Panama. And he was the best. He was the king of surface poos.
Aww.
And he was the king of pooing like really close to us. Like you're supposed to hike out where we can't see you. And what they would make you do when you poo or like pee away from the group is you'd have to count out loud so they know you're not running away. So one, two, three, and then you'd be like, 11, right? You're shitting and counting. And then if you stop counting, you know, the instructor would be like, I don't hear you, and you'd be like, 14, right?
You're a tough pooper anywhere else anyway. This must have been terrible for you.
Yeah, I mean, but you're eating oats and rice and lentils same time every day, essentially, so your bowels just get, you know, drinking water with iodine tablets in it from the rivers and shit. You know, there was no water bottles, you know, no showers. We'd soap in rivers and stuff like that. And I can remember every week I'd get that letter, right? And the first letter I got was that I wasn't going back to my old high school, BR.
Oh.
We are BR. And I was devastated because I was going to be my junior year of high school. And I was like, they're going to send me to Coyle Cassidy, Spelman, Thayer, one of these private schools in the area. I don't want to do that, right? And I was bummed and then, you know, kind of got over it. And then the next letter came and was like, oh, you're actually going to boarding school. So I'm like, I don't even get to be home. You know what I mean? I have to go to boarding school. And I was devastated. And I remember Conrad, my voice of reason, he was like, dude, boarding school is like college before college. There's girls. Your parents aren't there. You can drink. There's drugs. There's parties. And I was like, oh, all right. Doesn't sound terrible. And I was like, hanging on to, like, at least I'll get to go home for, like, a week or 2 weeks because I'll still have summer left, you know? And I remember the next letter was, you're going to a therapeutic boarding school. And then Conrad was telling me about what these therapeutic boarding schools looked like. And I think Paris Hilton had a whole thing about when she got sent to these types of programs when she was a kid and how much it, like, trauma it gave her and stuff like that or whatever. And I looked at him, and I was like, no, it's got to mean my parents wouldn't do that. And he sort of gave me one of these where he was like, sort of looked around like, look who you are, dude. What do you mean your parents wouldn't do that? And so I was devastated. I was bummed. And then we got a new guy, right? And I knew I was getting close to leaving because I was a Bear at this point. I was working on my checklist to become a Hawk. And we got a new guy. His name was Taylor. He was from New Brunswick, Canada, or something like that. And he was sort of like me, where he was like, you know, listened to rap music, wore tall tees and baggy clothes, you know. And so we clicked. We bonded. And I had already been there for a while, so I was kind of like giving him some materials that I collected that could help him out and so on and so forth. And so we clicked right away, and I'll get back to where he fits into the story at the end because it's kind of shocking. But so, again, this was a while. I could tell the story for 4 hours and not miss a beat. But I'll give you – I didn't know it was my last weekend there because they never tell you when you're leaving. But we had climbed what's considered a high peak. I forget what the elevation needs to be for it to be considered a high peak. So we climbed this mountain all the way to the top, stopped for lunch at the top, then came all the way back down and camped out at the base of the mountain. Then it starts to get like a little rainy, right? Because you're in the elements the whole time. Rain. Thank God it was the summer because they run this program in the wintertime. Imagine that. And so all of a sudden the counselor's beepers started going off. And I didn't even know they had them, right? Beep, 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 beep. Beep, 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 beep. It's my first time hearing an electronic in friggin' so long, you know? And so they looked at each other like they saw a ghost. And one of the instructors was like, listen, I've worked here for 14 years and this beep has not gone off once. And what the message said, I don't know if you remember beepers, like they just, you can have like a text message kind of shoot across almost like a weather alert type
ticker.
Of thing. A ticker, yeah. And so it said, severe weather alert, practice safety precautions, right? So unbeknownst to me, I later found out it was the biggest rainstorm to hit the Adirondacks in 20 years, and I'm in a freaking bug net under the top at the base of a mountain, right? And so they try to tell us that we need to sleep on these rubber pads, and we have to put our elbows and our knees on them and kind of sleep like this. And after climbing a freaking mountain, I was just like, fuck that. If I get struck by lightning, because they were worried, like, if a tree gets struck by lightning and the roots catch or something like that, you could get electrocuted. And so I was like, I'm not sleeping on that. You know what I mean? So I just slept normally. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it was like sheets of rain, as if God had buckets up there. And he was just dumping them on us. Sheets of rain. Trees are falling. Panama John's tent gets swept away. And he comes and runs under mine. And he's like shivering, right? And counselors are running around making sure that tops aren't set up next to any like dead trees that could fall, you know what I mean? And it starts flooding, all of our stuff's getting wet. A pack that normally weighs 50 pounds now weighs 80 pounds, 90 pounds. And so then we had to hike back out, and we're all laughing, you know what I mean? Because at this point, I'd been in the woods for like 40 days. And we're all laughing and making the best of it. But we had to hike back out the way we came in for whatever reason. Never told us why we needed to head in certain directions. We just did exactly what they said. And so I know people are going to give me shit for smoking. You're not my mother. She gives me enough shit, all right? And so this little tiny Babylon Brook that we crossed the day before was now rapids from the runoff of the mountain, right?
Oh,
it was
no.
like a rushing river now, and we needed to cross it. So Toby was cool because I think he stayed with us for 3 weeks because he just loved our group so much. Like, we ended up breaking records. They named the campsite after us because we were like, literally, I can remember one day we were running down the side of a mountain and we were jumping as we were sprinting and attaching ourselves to tree branches, pushing off and then continuing to run down the mountain like Wolverine. We were like, it was insane.
That's pretty cool.
We became like men of the woods, you know? And so Toby jumps in with a rope that he had tied to one tree and then ties it across to the other tree. And he's like, all right, what you guys are going to do with your packs on, slowly step into the water and use the rope to get across. And Jake won. The little Jake had like a little man syndrome. So he's like, I'll go first. And we're like, all right, Jake, go for it, dude. You're going to see. And remember, Toby grew up in the Adirondacks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he could get a piggyback from a bald eagle and fly around. You know what I mean? Like, he was, so that was no problem for him. But for Jake, this little kid from the city, he stepped in 1 foot. He stepped in 2 feet. As soon as he picked up his other foot, he got swept down the river. And Toby ran after him, and the other council's like, all right, looks like we got to find another way across. And so we found upstream, we found this tree that had been downed over the river so we could, like, army crawl across this tree. And they had us army crawl because it was covered in moss. And, of course, I'm the last one to go. I'm in the back of the line, and I'm literally squatting and pooping in the water. So it runs down, like the runoff, like of the side, it runs back into the river, and then just scooping up the water and wiping my ass with it. Like, we're in the woods, bro. You know what I mean? And so then I'm last to go across this log, and I'm like, I'm going to walk it. So not only do I walk it, I start Michael Jackson moonwalking and Dan trying to make everybody laugh. Slip, fall, hit my side on it. Get rushed down the river. I end up making it to the side. And now I'm soaking wet, hiking for another 15 miles or so, right? And then that night, just before it got dark, right? It was similar to like what it is now for light outness, for the lack of a better word. Yeah. I had unbeknownst, but now I'm using light outness, right? And you might be saying to yourself, like, what's the point of having your co-host here if you're just going to tell a story the entire time? I need someone to tell the story to, because if I was telling it to the camera, I don't think you'd get the same vibe. Now that we got that out of the way, back to the story. So the counselors started approaching me in a weird way, and I knew what that meant. That meant it was time to become a fucking hawk, right? It was finally time.
So pumped.
So they hike me out away from the group by myself to a small little clearing that they had tied a thick-ass rope between two trees, maybe like this tree and this tree apart, 20 feet in the air. And they were like, you need to bow drill a fire and get the fire big enough to burn that rope down. A controlled fire big enough to burn that rope down. And then you need to find your way back to the group. If it takes you 3 days, 4 days, like however long it takes you, you're out here by yourself. I had my own supplies. And now I was shook. Because it was like, all right, I thought I was this badass. Now I don't want to be by myself. You know what I mean?
Without Toby.
But I was like, I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. I was like, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to be a hawk. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool being a bear, but it's time to spread my wings and fly away from the Adirondacks and go back to Bridgewater. And so I had got my fire going finally, and I had all this wood, and I'm piling it, but I couldn't get the fire more than like 6 or 7 feet high. I'm like, how am I supposed to burn this down? So I start hiking around and I find a pine tree, dead pine tree that had fallen. And I essentially drag it with all my might back to the fire. And I almost replant it into the ground. And all I did was light the bottom of it with a stick that was on fire. And the thing went up, whoosh, burst into flames and was high enough to burn the rope down. Right. And so I didn't even I think I spent one night there. Right. And then and then the next day it was burnt down and I hike back to the campsite. And as I'm approaching the campsite, they could hear in the distance, all my group mates, they could hear in the distance, caw, caw. And as I got closer, ha, ha, I was making hawk sounds, right? And they were getting fired up and they were hawking back to me. Ha! It wasn't a thing, like I just tried to be funny, right? They're high-fiving me, I'm fired up, right? And so they come up to me and they're like, congratulations, you're a hawk. And guess what? You're leaving tomorrow. And then they were like, you're leaving tomorrow, you're leaving tomorrow, you're leaving tomorrow. It's going to be our most kids we've ever graduated at the same time. I wanted you guys to graduate as a group because I've never had, in my 10 years of working here, I've never seen a group work as hard as you guys worked. So you're all graduating together. Like the core group that was there, you know, there was some new guys like that kid Taylor from New Brunswick, right? And so, you know, I remember there was like this long dirt road and our family, all of our families were walking towards us as we were walking towards them. It was like a friggin' movie. And at this point, like, you know, I'm emotional. I had no drugs in my system for the first time in a long time. Yes, I was sour towards them for tricking me and sending me away, but I was emotional and excited to see my family. And I remember we had this big graduation ceremony and then we get in the car. And they go, and I go, let me get your phone, Ma. I want to call Carl, my buddy Carl. He's my best friend at the time. She's like, what do you want to call Carl for? Mind you, Carl was just as big of a troublemaker as me, and now he's a medical doctor, right? So he turns, good job, Carl.
Glow up.
And she was like, well, you're not going home. And I said, what do you mean I'm not going home? She said, well, we're going to go to Lake George for 3 days as a family, and then you're going right to that other place. And I remember I turned and I punched the window as hard as I could in the car. And my parents were like, oh, it didn't work. It didn't work. But where I was going next, you thought that was bad. I was in the woods for 44 days and that place didn't hold a candle to where I was going next.
Oh, no.
Okay. And I'll leave that story of where I went next for another episode. But essentially, I got sent to a therapeutic lockdown boarding school where... my only contact with the outside world is every Monday from 8 p.m. to 8:20 p.m. I could call my parents and that was it. I couldn't write letters to my friends. I couldn't go on MySpace, nothing. For 20 minutes a week, that's it. I could only call my parents. More confined than jails and prisons, right?
Oh, my God.
And those 20 minutes a week consisted of me begging them to let me leave the program. And essentially, I was there for 11 months. And there's so many stories I could tell, but I'll leave that for another episode of that program itself because it was wild and I had some wild, crazy stuff that happened while I was there and met a lot of interesting people. And so, but what I will do is circle back to that kid Taylor that I was in the wilderness program with, right? Fast forward, I'm in my early 20s, right? I think I'm 22, 23 maybe. I forget exactly. And I'm living in Brockton at the time in an in-law apartment in my grandmother's basement. So I must have been 22, 23. And for whatever reason, I was at my father's house in Bridgewater and I was watching by myself and I was watching a Netflix movie called Dog Pound. And it was about kids that got sent to a juvenile detention center. Like these good kids from a nice town get sent to this juvie. And then as the movie goes on, they get to the jail and they're in the lunch line, and they show the main antagonist of the movie, the big bully. And he's putting food on the kid's tray, and he's giving him a hard time, kind of talking shit. And it's the kid Taylor that I was in the woods with.
Holy crap.
And I'm looking at it, and I go, is that the kid that I was in the wilderness program with? There's no way. So I look him up on IMDb, where you can look at movies, who acted them in them and stuff like that. And then I find him on Facebook, and I message him. And apparently he had called my father's jewelry store while I was at the other program, and my father had to tell him, like, no, unfortunately, he went to another program. He's going to be there for the next year. And so I message him on Facebook, and I go, tell me I'm not watching Netflix, and you're in a friggin' movie. And he was like, yeah, I was actually in juvie, and they came to do, like, reconnaissance for the film and said, you know what, you'd be perfect for this role. Do you want to be in this movie? And that's how I got the role in the movie. And he was like, you know, and that, trust me, like, this wilderness program in this therapeutic boarding school, I think it altered the course that I was heading down, but it didn't fix me. I had years of substance abuse and other issues, you know, that I faced one immediately upon leaving there. Because I did my whole junior year of high school at this program, was about to turn 18, so my parents couldn't send me anywhere else. I went back to my public high school and then ran amok from there. So the kid's like, yeah, I got blues, I got weed, I got, you know, we can hang out. And I was like, oh, word. Well, he was like, I'm living in Waltham, Massachusetts now. Because originally he was from Canada. So I was like, oh, dude, I live in Brockton. Like, we can link up, you know what I mean? And he's like, yeah, for sure. 2 weeks later, I'm in my grandmother's basement watching the news, breaking news. Two men wanted for murder over a drug deal gone bad, and he was one of the guys. He's now doing life in prison.
Holy crap.
Killing a kid over it. And I was like about to go hang out with him. And that was the kid that I was in the woods with. You know what I mean? Maybe if I hadn't given him my materials, you know, he had a tougher time in the woods. Maybe he would have never come. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I think being in the woods and telling the story has definitely, like, helped me tell it in a way I haven't told it in a long time.
For sure.
Because, like, it's bringing back those memories when you're thinking about that stuff. And, you know, yeah, it was definitely a traumatic experience, but I don't blame my parents because these programs will sell the parents on they're the last resort. They will fix your kids. Here's all the success stories. So, and my parents, as a parent now, I couldn't imagine if my son was doing the stuff that I was doing. So I understand where they were coming from now, and it was all out of love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't out of laziness either because they exhausted every possible thing that they could do to try to help me. And I just wasn't listening. You know what I mean? I'll post a couple of the pictures that were taken of when I was in the wilderness program. And, you know, one thing about the whole thing is I'm a hawk for life, baby. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Nobody Cares Anthony podcast. Stay tuned for the version of the story that takes place at the therapeutic boarding school. And if you want behind the scenes and stories that I'm going to be telling that I'm not comfortable releasing on the internet, follow me on Patreon. It's only $5 a month to subscribe. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Packy, for having, you know, a body here to give me somebody to tell the story
Absolutely.
To. Josh and Flick, my amazing production team, setting this up in the woods in the middle of nowhere. Until next time, guys. Thanks.
Thanks for being here.